future. There are no people. There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Hey, everybody, everybody. Welcome, welcome. It's Wednesday, September 22nd, 2021. And that means it's time for another episode of The Wednesday Show with Cyril Michalko. Cyril, of course, is a progressive columnist for the Bucks County Courier-Times and the Intelligencer. And you can get all our shows. That includes Out the Coop Live on Monday evening. That's our interview show. And our Friday Politics Roundup, in which Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yeah, you can get them all by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. And all our shows are, of course, available on our YouTube channel. You should also make sure you're signing up for Cyril's newsletter on Substack. That's cyrilmichalko.substack.com. Don't worry if you don't know how to spell it. We got the link for you right down in the show notes. And you can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. Man, your support has helped make this show possible. And the shout out goes to our latest member once again, to Pink Lady, who joined at the $15 a month level. Thank you, Pink Lady. And to all of our subscribers, and for those people out there who are just kind of sharing our show all over the place, which I really appreciate. Got a little something that I'm thinking about sending out to some of the people who got to earn the gold stars on the social media circuit for this one. Certainly, you can also help out this show by head on over to our YouTube channel if you're not there already, and smash that subscribe button, like the stream for this show, and hit that notification bell so you'll know every time that we go live. You can join our Discord server to continue the conversation all week long. Just click on the link in today's show notes. And a special shout out once again goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at @SongOfDayMan. That's with two N's. That's at @SongOfDayMan on Twitter. Well, man, it is another Wednesday. Welcome, Cyril. Good to see you, man.
Hey, good to be back.
Hey, good. So on today's show, Cyril's new column dropped last week, and we kind of gave you a little preview of it at last show, but we're going to dig into it. This one is kind of like gloves off in my mind, you know, the title of it, Bucks County GOP Must Reject Militias, QAnon, Proud Boys, and Other Extremism. We're also going to have a little peek into, one of our favorite little trolls out there, Jamie Cohen Walker. We'll talk a little about that. Some editorial from the USA Today Network put out, which is pretty awesome. And yes, we're at the 10th anniversary of Occupy Wall Street. So we'll kind of get into all that. But first and foremost, Cyril, man, I'll tell you, you know, I know you said that, you know, you've got a good column coming out that's going to be hitting some hard stuff. But holy moly, man, you just kind of really took the gloves off for this one. So why don't you kind of give us a little overview of what you talked about this week.
Sure. Yeah, thanks. You know, chronicling the extremism of the Republican Party really is like a full-time job, right? Like, you know, I would even suggest
for sure
the local papers could even have like a right-wing extremism disinformation beat, right? Like a beat reporter, where they're just dedicating someone to kind of chronicle this full time, because it's happening almost every day, right? Like new things are coming out, new things are shared on social media, things that are being said at the school board meetings. But, you know, like I've have said before and kind of like wrote on the article, like historically at least, like, you know, the paper's been kind of like very hesitant about kind of calling out these, you know, the right-wing extremism in the party, because, you know, I'm not sure exactly why. Maybe it's because they have, you know, some of these people have been guests on the podcast, you know, for the paper. Maybe they, you know, they're business associates or neighbors. But part of the problem was, is because of that, this extremism has kind of just been like quietly spreading throughout the party ranks, right? And it's been happening a while. Like, it's not just Trump. And I've mentioned this before, and in my newsletter, it's just like, you know, if you go back to like 2011, you know, the Thomas Jefferson Club in Newtown, Pennsylvania, right? They invited the president of a hate group called VDARE, right? Like a white nationalist, xenophobic, anti-immigrant hate group, to give a talk to its members. You know, the Peter Brimlow, the founder of this group, was like gushing about the response that he got from the Newtown crowd. You know, these are, and you know, these, you would think like the Newtown, like these are just like, you know, you might think historically they're just like business Republicans, right? But they're not, right? That's not it. Like, that's not where their Republicanism goes. Like, the old Republican Party of maybe like talking about like, you know, laissez-faire economics and the more muscular, you know, foreign policy, that's a debate I'd love to have with people, and we can have that. But now, unfortunately, they've been infected by this social virus of extremism. And then Trump just kind of like breathed new air into it, normalized it, mainstreamed it. So now these folks are even, they're unapologetic about this.
Right.
So, you know, and just like the one big news story, you know, that the Courier Times has done a good job reporting on with their straight news reporting with Chris Ullery, you know, has just been the unmasking of this militia group in Central Bucks that wanted to insert itself into the, not only to just the school board debate around public health and safety for kids, but they're inserting themselves into the election, right? And so this group, the Proud American Patriots Network, is a 3% militia cell. The 3% militia is a group that Canada has designated a terrorist organization. Now, a lot of these folks in the, you know, with the within the Reopen Bucks blob and you know, other rank and file Republicans are trying to are just regurgitating the leader of this group, TJ Kosin's claim that, you know, they're just a charity. What kind of charity has training documents, right, where they're trying to create combat-ready units with sections on sniper operations, reconnaissance, intel gathering, headshots? You know, they have a director of intelligence. And so, you know, I think it's just important that, you know, the newspaper, the Courier, just kind of clearly called them out on that, which is what my column was doing, and saying, hey, either the mainstream of the party leadership, either you reject this now, or then we can just interpret the fact of your silence, that you're okay with this, that you recognize that this is your party now, and this is how you're going to keep going moving forward.
Well, and I think that's a critical point right there about the role of, you know, the local media in this whole kind of discussion, right? Because we, you know, even if you know, we want to say that maybe the media is going to be a little bit more kind of cautious about following something which they think is like a conspiracy theory, even though I'm saying, even if they think that, right? Because I've got something else to say about that in a second. But at the very least, at this point, I think it's absolutely clear that the extremism is deep within, say, the Bucks County Republican Party. And the leaders, the Republican leaders who are standing up and are still posing as the moderates within their party, you know, even just kind of the local party, not even Brian Fitzpatrick, right? Just even just the level of people who are controlling, they should be questioned on this stuff, right? And ask them, like, what their affiliations are with this and how they think about the numbers of these radical groups that are making their way into their party, right, and claiming themselves as Republicans. At what point do they disavow those people in their own party, right? And, you know, that pressure should be felt, right? So, you know, I don't think there's any question at this point that that's where we're at, right? I mean, I think that's been exposed by what's been happening here in the, you know, in the school boards. You know, and on the other hand, you know, I think, you know, in part, I think part of the problem initially was I do think that journalism, especially local journalism, well, I shouldn't say especially journalism, but, you know, journalism, mainstream journalism was slow to get on this, you know, focus, right? For a long time, because I think that there was a concern that, okay, look, we don't pay attention to the stuff that's on the fringes. We just could ignore them because there's all these kind of nutty people that are always out there. So they're just going to go away. Right. And then there was folks within, you know, I would say even the mainstream Democratic Party were thinking like, okay, we don't need to actually engage with these people. We don't need to critique them. We don't need to out them because they're just going to go away. So we're going to, you know, and everybody would quote, you know, Michelle Obama, when they go low, we go high. And I'm sorry, when you're talking about people that are, you know, are proto-fascist, if not full-blown white supremacist and white nationalist, that doesn't work that way. That basically what you're doing is you're ceding ground to them. That's the function of like appeasement at that point. Right. You know, because we're always, you know, and again, you know, people don't like this frame sometimes, but I'm always like, you know, when they go low, punch down. Right. It's like, because you got to stop those people from infecting, right, you know, our, kind of our local institutions, because you get to a certain point and it's too late.
No, absolutely. And again, like it, and it's not just like the kind of rank and file that, you know, you're seeing at the school board meetings, but, you know, it's also like the leadership, the grassroots leadership of the party. So like in my column, I talked about, you know, the former head of Bucks County-based People for Trump, Jim Worthington, right, who owns the Knack.
Exactly.
He, in an interview, and I'm quoting word for word, describing how he, what he thought about Democrats to Canada's The Globe and Mail, the only thing they hate more than America is themselves. They're self-loathing, violent, mean, aggressive. Who has time for that kind of hate? Now imagine what he's saying behind closed doors, right? Like he felt comfortable saying something as like insane and disgusting as that to, you know, a national, not international newspaper, right? And then you have people like Dean right. Malik, who, you know, after it was reported that the Proud Boys were kind of rallying arm in arm with local Republicans in support of Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick to try to urge him to, not vote for the impeachment, you know, he goes on Facebook and posts, oh, these are not violent or hateful extremists. They're just a group of patriotic young men supporting our president, right? So these are like two of the main, you know, main grassroots leaders, or and in case of Jim Worthington, you know, he's one of the Republican Party leaders in Bucks County. And this is the type of extremism that they're kind of propagating. And never mind that, like, Worthington has Fitzpatrick on speed dial, right? Like, you know,
right.
There was that Rolling Stone article that came out that kind of, like, talked about that, that kind of dug deep into that. And he's counseling him on how he is, you know, how Fitzpatrick should be voting. This moderate bipartisan Brian has this hyper-partisan loud and extremist voice in his ear whispering to him about how he should vote on major issues that impact the country.
Yeah, and let's be clear that that speed dial seems to be work both ways, right? I mean, one of the things that we saw in that Rolling Stone article, and this has been kind of reported by some local media too as well, is that Fitzpatrick would often call him.
Yeah.
Right. To get his thoughts on, you know, oh, well, you know, we got this real estate bill going on. What are your thoughts on it? We got small business bill coming. What do you think about this? So, you know, it seems like Worthington actually, you know, was there obviously pushing his agenda. But Fitzpatrick actually would want to make sure that he kept him on the hook, too.
No, absolutely. You know, and then just finally, just the other thing that we've seen in the party grow is just like the popularity of this kind of QAnon cult. This kind of conspiracy theory cult where, you know, first, like Brian Fitzpatrick's last primary challenger was a QAnon follower. Like, you know, that's like the one of the best that the local Republican Party had to offer. Like, that's who they put up in the primary election. And then we have these school board candidates like Ricky Chaykin and Penridge and Cora Landis and Palisades. Cora, who declared, I am QAnon, right? Like that, on top of like the, you know, anti-LGBTQ bigotry, or the homophobia, the racism, like how are they not disqualifying factors for a party, for the Republican Party?
Yeah.
Or this, you know, keeping kids in school pack, which endorsed them. Like two of the candidates that were endorsed by the militia are backed by the keeping kids in school pack. How, you know, if they're a responsible organization, how are they not disavowing this, like this dangerous far-right, anti-government militia. And, you know, it's been crickets from the Republican Party. And quite frankly, right. I don't think they're going to say anything because, you know, it's probably one of two reasons. It's either one, they're scared that they're going to lose voters and maybe there'd be some kind of like Patriot Party like prop up here in Bucks County that would challenge the Republican Party. Or, you know, maybe they just, you know, they agree with it. They agree with all this extremism. Like, until they, like, come forward and just kind of, like, have an honest conversation with someone at the newspaper, and I'm sure it's not going to be me, but, like, one of the straight news reporters, you know, then what else are we to think, right?
Well, because, look, I mean, the results of either one of the scenarios that you gave, right, either they agree with this stuff, right, or they're afraid, the results are the same. Right. I mean, the outcomes of either one of those actions is true. So, you know, and this is also one of these points where it becomes very, very important, I think, for all of us, you know, say on the progressive left and those folks who are actually just looking to kind of preserve some sense of like sanity within our local institutions and stuff, to say, like, look, this is not about like what's truly deep down in their hearts. Right. I mean, frankly, I don't really care about that. I care about like what the results are of kind of what they're doing. If they're, you know, if they're afraid, right, and they refuse to act, right, because they're afraid they're going to lose voters, that's just as bad,
yeah,
right, as if they actually really believe it. Because then basically what they're doing is they're giving shelter to this, right? And I look at this, you know, I was in a very different context. I was talking about this, using this as an example too as well, is one of those things that I could never, ever get past, right? I mean, I grew up Catholic, right? And when there was always stories about pedophile priests, right? There was always stories about them. But when that stuff finally broke and came out, yeah, right? What was worse for me than the actual horrible human beings that those pedophiles were is that the entire infrastructure that allowed them to exist and continue. And that is like, that is inexcusable. That in some ways is like, you want to put it in these frames, a worse sin, right? That if you say we have a person who's mentally deranged, right, and horrible human being versus this, and you have a similar dynamic working here. It's the same kind of thing you always had, like the thin blue line nonsense, right? You got these horrible cops, but then you got an infrastructure that protects killers, right? That good, they actually abuse citizens. And here we've got a Republican Party who's following that same dynamic. They're basically allowing these people to get, they're giving them shelter and either directly supporting them, right, or giving them enough cover where they can have a disproportionate influence and harm our community.
No, either way, it's a staggering profile and cowardice by the Republican Party. It really is.
Yes.
And the thing is, like, I've been hearing from some folks who I wouldn't even say are, like, necessarily a fan of, like, my politics or anything, but just some moderates, you know, either moderate Republicans or moderate Democrats or, you know, moderate swing voters who are definitely kind of like turned off by the direction, yes, that the Republican Party is going in. And, you know, I think, you know, the way they go or the way they vote is going to be critical in this November and the Novembers to follow.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's going to be turnout for those folks who are already realizing what the issue is and then what's going to happen with those voters, too. And I agree, too. I know a lot of, you know, folks through my kids and all this stuff who are, you know, would not really describe them as political at all. Right. My guess would be a bunch of them are kind of registered Republicans. Right. But have said, you know, just like, but man, once that letter came out, for example, at Penn Ridge School Board, you know, about like Governor Wolf and tyranny. And so they're like, man, this is not what I expect. But, you know, they're not the only ones. I mean, you had something up on Twitter this week, too, as well, about Jamie Cohen Walker, right? Where, you know, kind of another version here where we've got this, you know, craziness around the masking ordinances and this just going off the rails, too.
No, I mean, absolutely. So, like, you know, she's part of the whole, like, reopen Bucks blob that's been kind of, you know, attacking all these different school boards and health and safety plans. And, like, you kept hearing, you know, in addition to kind of the really off-the-wall and insane critiques, like, this is, like, a neo-communist takeover or citing, like, an 1866 Supreme Court decision suggesting that makes social distancing illegal, right? Or that like masks kill kids, you know, because of like CO2. Like, in addition to all that insanity, right? Then one of the things they were trying to say is like, oh, we're like quote unquote pro-choice now, right? Or at least they want to be able to choose whether to, you know, mask their kids and endanger other kids in the entire community. But that whole like choice framing is just a kind of, you know, that was just a smokescreen, because here we have like Jamie Cohen Walker, who on Facebook now what she wants to target is actually teachers wearing masks in school. So she doesn't want them to have a choice. She just wants them unmasked. She says, quote, "It's totally unacceptable. Parents cannot accept this as education. Maybe we should all get IEPs or 504s saying our kids need to see faces."
Blow my mind.
I mean, how sick is that?
Deeply, deeply disturbed. And, you know, I have to say there was a response. You know, you put up this tweet with that, you know, showing what she had said there, basically saying, hey, you know, like, look, our kids are now, they're, you know, they can't see the teachers' faces. Now they're having subpar education. It's totally unacceptable. We should get IEPs and 504s saying our kids need to see faces. And you had a kind of an educator, like with a doctor of education, going to basically respond and basically say, look, I've been teaching kids with special needs for 15 years, and this is just BS. Kids are learning fine. Teachers are working insanely hard to ensure this happens and are crushing it as always. And then, oh, and the implication that you can force compliance with the legal process for IEPs is insulting. Kids with real needs are waiting for evaluation that cause all the fake exemptions, because all the fake exemptions are eating up time. And so you actually have like these people, these Reopen Bucks folks that are pushing for this, is basically saying, yeah, let's flood an already overtaxed system, right, that is designed to help kids with special needs by faking that they've got some sort of medical condition and run it through this IEP process in 504, and then it's actually going to interfere with the delivery of services to those kids that really need it. I mean, it's disgusting.
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, thankfully, you know, the newspaper, again, has been doing, I think, a really good job. The USA Today, Pennsylvania's network, which the Courier-Times and the Intelligencer is part of, they published their an editorial today about this whole mask debate throughout their, I think there's like 13 or 14 newspapers throughout the state. You know, and the title just says it all, like, mask mandate offers kids freedom to stay safe and in school, which is like, that's the one thing like everyone wants. We all want, you know, everyone wants their kids in school. And, you know, and it was good because the one thing they did do is that they called out groups, quote, some funded by dark money, who politicized measures to fight the pandemic, from school closures to masks to business shutdowns, you know, groups like the Reopen Buck Club.
Yep.
And that's what they did. They're just cynically politicizing this. I mean, I'm sure there's some like true believers and Kool-Aid drinkers. I think like the people like kind of like, you know, pulling the strings from above, you know, they see this as the new kind of like culture war battleground that they believe is going to mobilize voters come November.
Absolutely. And look, you know, this is one of the things that Sean and I, you know, on our Friday politics roundup, Sean and I talk a lot about this. Right? This is a strategy. And, you know what Sean has always said is like, yeah, look, this is what happens, is that they've been, you know, the right wing in this country and the GOP, they've got nothing. So you're just throwing a bunch of stuff up against the wall and see what sticks. And for whatever reason, the mask one is where, you know, they thought they were going to get some traction with the DEI stuff and things like that. But that, I don't know, maybe it was a little bit too obscure or too much. But the masking thing seems to have stuck as kind of one of these kind of like crafted culture war stuff, you know, that kind of gives voice to some real frustration, but does it in the worst possible ways. And that is a kind of a strategy. And it's like, you know, this is what happens also when you've got a party that is empty of anything that can really benefit people, other than kind of getting them angry and frustrated and looking to like looking around them and who in their community can they design to hate and blame for their own feelings. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And unfortunately, this is, you know, the worst part about this is it's coming down on the backs of our kids. right? It's being played out kind of in direct order. You know, I hear this, you know, from school kids when they come back from school, from my own kids and from some kids in the neighborhood. It's like, you know, they've got like kids they're in school with having their mask up and then pulling it down, and like, and then people go, why, you know, if you're not going to wear your mask, why do you even have it on your face? And then being told like, well, because I'm making a point, I'm standing up for what I believe in. Right. And then when they're asked, like, what do you believe in? Like, no mask. That's it. Right. That's the, you know, that's the extent of it. But to know that that's actually happening in our schools now is even that much more disgusting.
Yeah. I'm not sure how we kind of like get past this and move forward. How do you kind of like bridge this divide? You're not going to reach someone like a Jimmy Cone Walker, right?
No.
That's not going to happen. And you could have like a reasonable or rational debate around it, I think, you know, but reason and ration and common sense and science is not like a kind of, it's not a strong point for a lot of these reopen bucks blob people.
No, that's absolutely right. And I think that, you know, at least it's any judge by some of the, you know, say the parents organizations and the community groups that are organizing around this stuff. I think a lot of people are coming to that conclusion, like sooner rather than later, right now. And then the question is of organizing, you know, is really of organizing and having a, creating a power base, you know, from the ground up, from the grassroots. Because it's not about, you know, yes, the arguments are important. We have to have those out in front. Those are the place when, like, in our public, in our newspapers and everything, those arguments should be articulated and well articulated about why all this stuff is wrong and why this is bad. Meanwhile, right, if we want to have that, give that any force, then there has to be the organizing on the ground. And there is that kind of organizing that's going on. And, you know, I think it's also, you know, useful to remember. I mean, you know, you wrote about this in your newsletter, and I've been reading about this too as well. It's the 10th anniversary of Occupy Wall Street. What's interesting about that is that movement, Dissent had this great piece in it, which you write about, which I've written about this, and talked about the legacy of Occupy Wall Street and actually creating a movement. Because, I mean, if you remember at the time, because Occupy Wall Street, it was kind of like, you know, quote unquote over, right, by like November, maybe December in some places, of 2011, right? In other words, there was no more big giant occupations that were happening in kind of city centers kind of across the country. Yet what came out of that movement has been nonstop organizing and growth, to the point where we're seeing, you know, new generations kind of emerging out of that and drawing from the energy from Occupy and the lessons from Occupy and doing that kind of organizing. So it's kind of cool to see, you know, here at this kind of 10th anniversary of Occupy that we've, you know, organizing is on the table again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like one of the things, you know, that I think was really remarkable about that kind of movement moment was that like that was like an introduction really to like political activism and engagement for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people from all walks of life, from different backgrounds, who didn't necessarily have a political or activist background, kind of got involved in this. And, you know, one of the things like Gabriel Winant wrote in like Dissent was just like, that was like an important consequence that, you know, wasn't necessarily like direct political victories, but, you know, quote, rather the experience itself, the individual lessons it taught, and the ways that it became embedded in the life histories of those who went through it, right? Exactly. And it's moments like this that can have like a profound impact on people and really kind of like change the trajectory of their think, not only their thinking, but of their lives. I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, but for me, a similar experience was like in 1999, like the, you know, WTO, like Battle of Seattle, you know, where for like 4 days, like, you know, close to 100,000 people were in the streets, you know, fighting for a more humane, sustainable, and just globalization. Now, I was getting into politics just before that, but that definitely just kind of like really like opened my eyes and kind of like propelled me on this path of like, you know, working for like global justice and like global solidarity.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that, you know, do check out, I'll put some of the links in the show notes today too as well, to both to Cyril's column, obviously to Cyril's column, but also to Cyril's stuff in his newsletter and the links and his discussion of what was happening with Occupy. And there's been several, what I thought was especially kind of interesting and useful about what you put in your newsletter was that, you know, you got some links to several different histories and kind of reflections on Occupy Wall Street. And again, the way I love the way you put it there, the way that Occupy became embedded in people's life experiences and how that's moved forward. So do check out Cyril's newsletter there too as well, because it's got some great links and some, you know, it's a good moment to kind of reflect upon the role of organizing and the meaning of organizing. And, you know, I have to say, you know, as I got this new t-shirt this week that says, like, says, you know, there's a big rainbow, except there's like an angry sun and says doom and gloom on it, right? You know, because I feel like very often in my place of work, especially when I'm kind of enter rooms with other faculty, I tend to either be, you know, I'm the doom and gloomer, right? Or I'm the, you know, I'm the jerk because nobody really wants to talk about this stuff and I'm forcing people to kind of talk about it, you know? So it's like, it gets frustrating, but it's like, you know, you see other moments right now, what's happening with, say, these parent organizations, what's happening in our communities, what's happening, say, with Indivisible, organizing around the school boards, what's, you know, we could expand that with DSA and PA Stands Up and the organizations that have emerged over the past several years. There is real reason to, you know, to have hope. As long as we're kind of more mobilizing around kind of really, say, concrete ends, which I, you know, is right in front of us. You know, we got election coming up here in November for the school boards, and that's going to be folding directly into a really consequential midterm election. So here we go. Hey, man, you got anything else for the good of the order?
Sure. So I'm working on another column, The Gloves Stay Off.
Yoo-hoo!
And, you know, it's going to explore why the Republican base in Bucks County no longer lives in an evidence-based reality, and how right-wing media and these kind of like right-wing information ecosystems are fueling right-wing rage and just right-wing ignorance.
Well, there you have it. We will look forward to that, absolutely. And we will be back here again, of course, next Wednesday. Cyril, man, always great talking to you.
Likewise, Kevin. Thanks.
All right. And as for everybody else, I'll let you know that we've got some bunch of scheduling stuff that's going on for some Out to Coop Live interviews. So I know that this past week we just had an open phones and we thought we had a couple shows kind of booked down, but there's some scheduling stuff that was going on. And so people then end up couldn't do the interviews, but I there's so much I want to tell you, but I don't have it confirmed yet. So I'm not going to tell you what goes on. But at the very least, check us out again on Friday, where Sean and I are kind of back in the seat to give our politics news roundup, and keep your eye on what's coming up for Out to Coop Live interviews too, as well. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Always great to be here on Wednesdays talking to Cyril. Keep out there, keep organizing, keep safe, right? Stay with each other, get each other's backs, everybody. See ya!